Il-program li ser tisimaw uwa miġju plilkom bixuqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Cavalleri, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year. I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio today for University Matters on Campus FM, Dr. Daniel Micallef. Just usual few words about my guest. Dr. Micallef is a resident academic at the Department of Environmental Design in the Faculty for the Built Environment here at the University. He graduated with first class honours in mechanical engineering in 2008. He then read for a PhD at the Technical University of Delft, jointly with the University of Malta. He received his PhD in 2012 in the area of wind turbine aerodynamics. He was then involved in postdoctoral research under an FP7 EU funding program at the University of Malta. Dr. Micallef's research area is urban physics, with particular focus on urban wind energy, flows around buildings on structures, and natural ventilation. Apart from these, he is also active in the area of internal building flow phenomena, such as heat and species transport. His work resulted in more than 25 articles in conference proceedings and 15 international journal articles. Dr. Micallef lectures in various subjects related to environmental design and civil engineering. These include modules such as Introduction to Building Physics and Environmental Modelling. Dr. Micallef is also Secretary General of the Chamber of Engineers of Malta. Welcome to the program, Dr. Micallef.
Thank you for having me.
This is a very interesting, very topical area of research, really, at the moment. And I think perhaps we'd better start off with looking in a general way at what you are trying to do, what your aims are with the research. There's an article which I recommend people to read in the latest edition of Think magazine, the university's research magazine. It says the Department of Environmental Design at the Faculty of Built Environment has come up with some ingenious ideas to strengthen modern building design. What do you actually mean by strengthening modern building design?
Traditionally, the way we design buildings has been either through experience from previous works, from previous projects. Lately, there has been a trend to incorporate within the design process the scientific approach. By lately, I mean quite some time ago. But obviously, with the development in science in practically all aspects that you can think of, building design has also gathered that momentum. By strengthening here, we mean that we have more informed decisions on how to design buildings. We can optimize the cost effectiveness of buildings. We can optimize the thermal comfort, for example, of occupants. We can optimize the design process in terms of how long it takes to actually design the building and a host of other issues. So this is what I really mean by strengthening. Strengthening in the sense that we use science to basically improve the design process in general across the board.
And of course the introduction of technology has now made this kind of pre-design, not only pre-building, possible, because you presumably use computational models.
Yes.
Which I hope we'll speak about a little bit later on. You start off this latest article in Think by stating that the modern house is a machine. In what ways is it a machine? You've also referred to it as a mathematical model, which made me try and imagine what this house looked like as a mathematical model. But anyway, do tell us all about that.
So just to clarify what I mean, so my research involves the study of the fundamental physics which occurs either at an urban level or at a building level. So what I mean by the house is a machine is that the physics that you find within these structures, these buildings, is actually physics which is the same as that which you find in machines. So really and truly, what we're trying to understand is not really the physics of a building, of how it works, but really the physics of flows within the building, which aid natural ventilation, for instance. The flows around buildings, which would enable, for example, the knowledge on forces which are present on buildings, on bridges, on structures. So in a way, a building, in that sense, is a machine, because it involves certain physical processes within it. And what we're trying to do is really understand those physical processes within the building.
I quite understand where you're coming from. I'm just trying to imagine the number of variables involved in looking at the design. I mean, it's just mind-boggling, really, because if all our houses were made out of 24-meter square boxes, it would be fine. But, of course, they're not. So how do you cope with those variables?
So that's a very good question, and it's a question which, when I started my interest in this area, it's a question which boggled my mind, actually, for quite some time. The research that we do is scientific research. So one of the concepts in scientific research is to study a variable at a time. So what we do in this type of research is we investigate certain variables, for instance, wind speed. Wind speed is one of the variables, right? So we investigate what happens under a certain variable to the internal environment. We test another variable and another variable and another variable. So we're understanding how each of these variables is affecting what happens within the building. Now, your question is right. In reality, we have a multitude of variables going on within the building. That's where you then shift, once you know what happens with the individual variables, that's when you shift to the case studies. So studies which involve all of these variables combined together, and you see their combined effect through experimentation, through modeling, and so on. So it's a methodological approach on how we arrive from the effects of single variables to the effects of multiple variables.
In the article, you talk about fluid dynamics. Perhaps you could, in a few words, give a bit of a description of what fluid dynamics actually are and how they come into the equation, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, just to clarify what a fluid means, a fluid is either a liquid or a gas. Well, or to be more technical, any material which exhibits those properties found in liquids or gases. Fluid dynamics is very important to our knowledge because the two most common, perhaps, substances in our world are water, which is a liquid, and air, which is a gas, which is composed actually of a number of gases. So fluid dynamics studies the physics, the mechanics of liquids or gases. It's a field which comes out of classical Newtonian mechanics, so classical physics. But lately, obviously, it has been expanded a lot because of the development of computers and so on, which we'll speak about, I'm sure, later.
Yes. You say in the article, the equations cannot be solved using direct mathematical techniques, and scientists need computers to crunch the large calculations, because when you're doing these measurements, and we've spoken already about variables, but the amount of data that is created by these computers, you have to deal with that somehow. So you have computational fluid dynamics. Yes. So what exactly is that?
Mm-hmm. A major distinction between the classical physics of Newton, where we study the effects of acceleration of bodies, of motion of bodies, and the study of fluid mechanics, the major difference is that fluid mechanics is much more complex in the sense that we have a continuum of these particles. What I mean is, just to clarify, for example, in fluid mechanics, we have to deal with issues which are called, for example, as turbulence, which are in itself random processes. So how do we deal with these issues? So there are a number of complications which arise in fluids as compared to the classical dynamics involving bodies. Now, the governing equations, the equations behind this sort of physics, are in themselves extremely complex. They are based on the classical Newtonian mechanics, but they are much more complex. Currently, at the moment, the mathematical techniques required to solve these sort of equations are not available, so the mathematicians still have some work to do. But at the moment, we use computers to sort of solve the problem numerically, we call it. So it's a sort of calculation which we do, so that we simplify these equations in a way that we can solve them. Until the mathematicians are able to solve these equations, then I lose my job. But the reality is that these types of equations really and truly are thought not to have a solution. So it's really unfair to say that.
No, we're only pulling their leg. So the data that you managed to capture from the CFD, in what ways can then be translated into improving, and we can go into what improving means, improving our homes and therefore the lives that we live within our homes?
So the major reason why we need these sophisticated techniques mainly comes from the aspect of energy. So through these sophisticated techniques, we are able to understand more how energy flows in or out of a building, and therefore design ways in which we can improve the energy performance of buildings. So that's one major way. There are other aspects, there are other applications. For example, one of the applications is thermal comfort within the building. So with these techniques, we are able to understand better how we can improve thermal comfort in terms of design. Other applications, not only internal comfort, but also external comfort, because as you know, wind, when it flows over a building, across a building, it generates in certain regions certain increase in the velocity of wind, which can sometimes be uncomfortable. So the way we design shapes of buildings can improve through informed decisions using these techniques, so we can improve again the comfort. There are other aspects of safety, for example. Safety, for example, for bridges. The bridge designer needs to make use of these techniques because it can lead to disastrous situations. So if, for example, the turbulence in the wind reaches certain levels, it can cause the structure of the bridge to actually fail. So in that respect, in civil engineering, there's a lot of application of these methods to understand how wind interacts with bridges. So these are just some hints of how it can be used. It's a wide range of applications, and it's gaining importance ever so much in industry.
Here in Malta, let's look at the Maltese context for a moment, and then perhaps go a little bit wider. We have very traditional methods of building, which have changed slightly, obviously, in these last years. I mean, there was a time when you only built in Maltese stone in and out. Now we can use different kinds of stone. And obviously now we have quite high-rise buildings where obviously we're not using Maltese stone, you're using other methods. Mm-hmm. In Malta, how can you use this kind of data with our traditional building? Also regulations, really, because we are fairly regulated about how you can build a building. Yeah. I don't know how modernistic, contemporary we can be to be able to incorporate perhaps some of the good things which you're coming up with. Do you find that these kind of rules and regulations are an impediment to your ideas and your results?
Well, in terms of the building materials as such, I cannot really comment because, as I said, this technique is more used for the study of flows, of ventilations, and so on. So in that respect, I cannot comment about. Maybe I can bring an example of yet another application, but related to your question. With this technique, we can study how pollution, which is emitted, for example, from a particular source, can influence neighboring regions, neighboring urban zones, for example. So if the legislators were informed or are informed of these techniques, I think the legislation in terms of pollution, in terms of the way we build and so on, could be more informed. So at the moment, I think legislators need to make an effort to update the law or legislation on what possible techniques can be used for urban planning, for various numbers of applications. By the way, this approach of creating legislation on the basis of scientific knowledge in terms of buildings has been done, for example, in the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, by law, before you build a building, so as part of the building permit procedure, you need to perform either a CFD study or a wind tunnel test on your building to ensure that it is wind safe. Okay, so there is safety in terms of any wind dangers that might arise. So this is an example of how legislators have bridged the gap to academia or industry, in the example of Holland, to be able to adopt these techniques, to bring these techniques within the legislative framework. These are examples.
When I watch some of these programs on TV, you know, nothing specialized, just for a general audience, but sometimes they talk about buildings that have been built with these particular aspects in mind, talking about heat or cold or containing both, really. Sometimes they show houses in deserts, sometimes they show them in much cooler climes, and they do show that particular techniques have been used to help to make them more livable in, and the use of glass, the use of certain other materials, you know, which I'm thinking, is that really necessary? Do we have to imagine somehow a Malta looking a bit different if we're going to use these techniques, or can they be incorporated into the kinds of design that Maltese people go for?
It's a bit of a general question, which I think is more directed to the architects, maybe, but I'll comment from my knowledge. I am of the belief that if we use the scientific method to really come up with informed designs, automatically, as a result of visual appeal or the way buildings look and so on, are positively impacted. So this is just a general belief of mine. That's all I can comment in terms of how a building looks if we use a certain type of glass or not. I'm afraid I'm not really
You're not the architect.
No.
But talking a little bit about architecture, engineering, I found it interesting that you came from an engineering background. You're a mechanical engineer. You've moved into the Faculty for the Built Environment. You're an environmental design. Is this a trend that people from different professions are now trying to dovetail their expertise and really come up with a very joined up answer to certain problems?
Well, in research, yes, it is now becoming increasingly important to collaborate between entirely different fields. So it's a reality which the research community is facing. Because reality is not made up of divisions into categories. There's no true architecture. I mean, these are divisions which people have made. So there's, yes, a sort of drive towards integrating the different disciplines. So it's quite common, yes. And it's becoming more important in Malta as well, locally.
And of course, you don't just collaborate with your local peers, but you also have contacts abroad, of course.
Yes, that's very important. Obviously, the research capacity which foreign universities have is really and truly much, much more than what we have locally, for obvious reasons, because of our size and so on. What we do have potential in my opinion, is the human resource. So our researchers, secret, our researchers always when they go abroad do manage to be successful, and not only being successful, but after they finish their studies, come back to Malta, they're actually still in contact with foreign researchers and so on. So what we have positive in Malta is the human resource. Secondly, being a small university, relatively small universities, which involves all of the faculties on one single campus, makes it easier for collaboration between different fields. So it's something which, in my opinion, should be exploited further, and is being exploited, in my opinion. There are various examples.
Yes, absolutely. There are several, and in several different areas, quite fascinating ones. Let's just turn to the thorny issue of expense now. You've come up with these wonderful pieces of information. The number crunching has been done through your CFD, and you really know the answers to how to, for example, keep the house cool in summer and warm in winter. And do you think that there is an extra expense, and I'm presuming that there would be an extra expense in this, an expense coming from various directions to building a house incorporating these kind of recommendations? Do you think that people are prepared to think long-term enough to incorporate them in the buildings that are going up now? Or do you think people think short term and say, gosh, it's going to add another 10,000 euros to the bill, I'm not prepared to do it?
Well, the way usually people think is it's not really worth going into the hassle of, you know, investing in these methods, investing in the right people and so on. However, the trend in technology is this. Until it, you know, it gains momentum, you find this this sort of
resistance
towards change. But then, as the technology develops, it becomes more common to use these techniques. So I think if I were to sort of predict what will happen in the future of design will be more towards these methods. Clearly, there's a clear trend toward across all fields of engineering towards using numerical methods and advanced techniques. There is a slight danger with this. Why? Because the major expense in using these tools is the human resource. So to find people with expertise, with the correct expertise. At the moment, the companies which produce these software, these types of software, are trying to sort of make the process, the entire process, so the equations, the physics behind it, more transparent to the user, so that any engineer coming out of university can make use of the software easily. That is a bit dangerous, especially in these advanced techniques, because the crux, so to speak, in these methods is to be able to interpret the results correctly. So there is a challenge, I think, which needs to be addressed there, especially in academia. So how the formation of engineers is carried out in these subjects. But in the future, what I see is a general trend towards designing a building practically artificial in the sense that it is a sort of virtual reality. We use virtual reality to design buildings. So this is, in my opinion at least,
the way we're going.
The way we're going.
In the last 2 minutes, I cannot resist asking you about wind turbines. I know that you did your PhD on wind turbines.
And I'm still interested.
Still interested, yes. Jolly good. Because that's been a very thorny issue. Not only in Malta, of course, but even abroad. Do you see a time when there will be some kind of wind turbine that goes beyond the very tall, rather intimidating, not particularly beautiful, close-up kind of wind turbines that we use today? Do you think there's a future in a kind of wind turbine, but that isn't perhaps what as we see it today?
Well, first of all, let's start from the reason why we need large wind turbines. Why don't we do 2,000 small wind turbines instead of one large turbine? The reason is maintenance mainly. So it's much less expensive to maintain one large wind turbine than 2,000 small wind turbines. So the question is cost at the end of the day. The technical alternative is to use small wind turbines or micro wind turbines, as sometimes they're called. The way this can be done is either not close to the built environment or within the built environment itself.
And one there, on every
there,
roof.
One on every roof. There is a topic which I'm interested in currently and I'm working on currently. So that's one possibility. Well, the trends, the general trends of the industry and of research is to continue to increase the size of the buildings because of financial reasons. At least the sort of positive aspect in terms of research is that we're going towards offshore wind energy at the moment. So we're trying to remove the large wind turbines from visible site and going into offshore wind energy. Now, offshore wind energy, or at least offshore wind energy for deep waters,
costs a lot
and is currently challenging to implement technically as well. So, but the trend is there. I mean, in 20 years' time, I see that offshore, deep offshore wind energy will be dominating over the nearshore or onshore wind turbines. Still, there is in terms of urban wind energy, and in the field of urban wind energy, there is still a research drive towards integrating wind turbines within the built environment itself. So it's something that, yes, it's being worked on.
Thank you so much, Dr. Daniel Mikhailov, for coming on University Matters to talk to us about the strengthening of modern building design.
Thank you.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġju plilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.